Welcome to the Butts in the Seats podcast, episode number 135.
Here we go.
I'm Nick, alongside Emily.
Good eye, mate.
Yeah, we're going to try to limit that.
Crikey.
alongside the old Nitro theme, because, again, fuck the current one, it's so bad. Emily was convinced it was a new song. I'm like, no, it's the same bad song.
It felt different, I don't know.
Well, this show should feel different, because it's the first post-Russo kind of Nitro.
It does feel different, but that's not a good thing. It felt very house show, and we'll get into that as we go, but this episode felt different for the wrong reasons.
Yeah, I just wanted to bring attention to something on the timeline. The reboot Nitro, so his big grand return, our episode for that came out on December 23rd, 2023.
It's like our Christmas episode.
So we have gone through a full year and a half of Vince Russo in our lives.
Mm-hmm. Too much. Arguably too much.
Yeah. That said, today we're talking about the October 9th, 2000 WWE Monday Nitro, live from Brisbane, Australia.
Brisbane.
And they didn't bring their A game. Not sure they brought the B game.
But there is a game there.
Yeah. Welcome to the Monday Nitro House Show edition.
Yeah, seriously. Like I said before, this had such house show energy. And I don't really know how else to describe that other than just this, nothing felt important.
That felt important, and it seemed like it kept seeing the same guys over and over and over again.
And when we got, like, big reveals of, like, players that should be big players, like the fucking champion, it was like, okay, the audience wants to see the champion, so we'll bring him out for a second. It felt very fan service. It didn't feel like we were moving a story along.
Well, partially the reason for that may be WCW expects Vince Russo to come back, and we are going to be in a holding pattern for a bit.
Mm-hmm.
I think pretty much until the pay-per-view, so...
Wait, I thought does he quit?
He...
I thought he got fired.
No. He got concussed and then was like,
okay, yeah,
I'm not going on the tour, and then just kind of doesn't come back to work.
This is going to ruin the tour.
I know. We'll talk about that a little bit in our backstage notes, but right before that, I do want to just mention the rating real quick. Nitro did a 2.5 this week, which I feel like is down.
That's not that down, though.
It's holding steady around there. It's just Raw did a 5.4, so they're easily still doubling some.
That's not going to be surprising moving forward. But I don't feel like 2.5 is that down. Based on the episode from last week. Like if I was watching this week to week, if I watched last week, I wouldn't want to come back. So to me, that this should be a steeper dip than it actually might be.
Yeah, but we've been saying that forever. When is it just
It's that slow but inevitable downfall we keep talking about. Which, by the way, that's what we do here. We talk about the slow but inevitable downfall of WCW through the late 90s and early 2000s.
Yeah, you keep saying, like, oh, it's not slow. I'm like, they are just keep pumping out a 3-0, then a 2-7. Last week? Last week was a 2-6, so it's literally down 0.1.
So barely down.
Yeah.
But that means that the majority of people who watched last week were like, I'll see what happens next week.
Yeah, or it's all the same people and just more people watch TV.
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah. But let's get into the backstage notes for this October 9th Nitro. The first one definitely relates to Vince Russo. In WCW sale news, Turner is insisting they will retain primetime TV rights for the shows. It's more about the ad revenue, but clearly indicates like, all right, they're going to keep the time slot. Like,
I feel like that is not what Bischoff wrote in his book.
At this point in time, that would be the plan if it's sold.
Oh, if it's sold. Yes. But this is after the first initial sale failed. Because WWF apparently in October tried to buy WCW.
Yes, we're in that right now.
So is that happening right now? Is that the sale that Ted Turner's talking about?
So, yeah, this gets so messy because we noted last week that people were like, WWE is going to buy it. But like Antonio Inoki was the source, who like famed, you know, like kind of liar.
Yeah.
The odds on favorites right now to buy it, because it's not fully clear, are Vince McMahon and Eric Bischoff.
Well, who both put in offers.
Yes. So Vince Russo is looking down a loaded gun going, well, if either of them buys it, I'm not going to end up working with them. So, he just doesn't come back to work.
I don't blame him. I'm going to go find God or something.
David Arquette apparently finally got all of his WCW money after, because he did the New Blood Rising run-in,
So he's finally paid out.
Yep, and he gave the money to the families of Owen Hart, Draws, and Brian Hildebrand.
Who is Brian Hildebrand?
He was like a former referee. We mentioned him very much
in passing. Yeah, the name sounds familiar.
I almost said Brian Pillman. That's because Kevin Nash is still not given the $20,000 he promised the Pillman family yet.
See, that's not surprising. I love that David Arquette's actually a man of his word and is a nice guy.
Everyone in ECW got paid this week, so they're not only two pay periods behind, which I'm like, well, it's like rather than a full month, I'm like, that basically is. I guess, well, we get paid bi-weekly, so maybe it's just they get paid weekly. I don't know.
Who knows?
ECW is mad at Masato Tanaka for agreeing to work an XPW show against Sabu, and he will not appear in ECW until 2005 for that one-off, and then I don't think they really bring him back. I know he does the show in 06, but I don't think he does another match after that. I could be wrong.
It's Sabu or Masato Tanaka?
Tanaka.
Okay.
Sabu does both and then sticks around.
Yeah, I figured.
Nitro in the UK now airs on an 11-day delay.
Jeez.
It used to be a 4-day delay.
How did that happen?
Just weird rights and contracts. Apparently the new network is heavily audio editing the show, and Thunder doesn't air in the UK at all.
Huh. They're not missing anything.
And in our final backstage note, Emily, let's talk about Juventud Guerrera.
Yes, you have been teasing this story to me for weeks.
Juventud Guerrera was arrested the morning before the Nitro taping for, quote, going berserk in a drug-induced rage at the hotel.
Going berserk.
He apparently smoked something that was laced with PCP.
Oh.
He stripped naked, was throwing furniture around the lobby. I heard one story of, you know the spot of it's the one thing they didn't want to happen?
Yeah.
Apparently that happened with the cops in Mace. Hoovy ducked it and they got the other cop.
Nice.
So Hoovy pleaded guilty to 2 counts of assaulting police as well as disorderly conduct, indecent exposure, and possession of a dangerous drug. He was ordered to pay $2,000 in fines and $1,400 in compensation to the officers not fully arrested.
Wow.
They do deport him back, like, you can't stay here. And upon getting home, he gets fired.
Oh.
However, WCW announces that Salvatore Guerrero has been released. So Eddie calls up Chavo, whose real name is Sal.
Wait, goes, what is is Juventud's real name Salvatore?
No, they accidentally announced they released Chavo, because Eddie calls Chavo and goes, what'd you do, man?
Oh my god.
Chavo's not fired. Yeah, but anyway. Hoovy, Hoovy's gone.
Yeah, that tracks.
But,
do you want to say goodbye to Juventud?
Yeah, I really should have had more planned, considering we kind of knew this was it. But, yeah, Hoovy jumped all over, but, like, minus his shitty juice gimmick, I have very little complaints about Hoovy.
I really did not like whenever he got on a microphone and talked. I was really anti him cutting promos. But whenever he got in the ring with another Mexican wrestler, like, him and Eddie, him and Ray, like, him and Psychosis? Oh my god.
Well, I mean, like, any of the cruiserweights. I don't think you need to necessarily, like, tone it down to that. Cause, like,
I don't remember him going with Kidman.
Yeah, they probably had a couple matches.
I'm sure they had matches, but I don't remember them being, like, whoa.
Yeah, he kind of got marred just by that, like, you're not a good promo, so we can only push you so far. And, I mean, he's one of the first examples of Eric Bischoff going, all right, everybody, masks off. Like,
yeah, I remember. It was him and Psychosis.
He was already unmasked by the time we started.
Oh, was he not part of that?
No. I don't really know what Hoovy's backstage attitude kind of was, because I, like, am barely aware that he actually does get signed by WWE in a couple of years. He ends up teaming with Psychosis and Super Crazy as, like, part of the Mexicals for a bit.
Oh.
And then he kind of just gets dropped from that. Like, I don't know what happens, but...
Yeah, well, the Mexicals were not pushed to high success.
No, but... It's pretty talented guys, and they at least kept their jobs for a bit. longer than Hoovy, but...
Yeah.
I am sad to see him go, because say what you will about the kind of gimmick, and they did tone down the filthy animals, you know, the whole hump you like the dog thing. And but, like, him and Ray were just doing good tag matches, and they had just started a best of five series with him and Ray, and, like, yep, they're dropping that now.
Oh, I don't even remember that.
It was on Thunder. It didn't make it over here.
Yeah, like, I remember him doing really well with other, I guess, just cruiserweights, but I remember him doing well with Ray specifically. And, like, enjoying him there. But anytime he was doing anything character heavy, I didn't like it. All that to say, I'm not going to miss Juventud Guerrera.
No.
No.
I miss him a bit, but it'll be here and there. I'd rather have him as Cruiserweight Champion than fucking Mike Sanders.
Yeah. But they're not using the, like, other Mexican wrestlers anyway.
They released all of them.
Yeah.
All right. With that, should we go into our weather report?
Sure.
Any status on that report, Emily?
I feel like I see a slight drizzle outside.
Oh, I think there's going to be thunder. So on this thunder, Jeff Jarrett opens the show and is interrupted by Beetlejuice.
He's still here?
Yes. Commentator Stevie Ray goes, who is this guy?
Jesus.
This
is going to be an ongoing issue that Nick has the entire night where Stevie Ray doesn't know what's going on.
He doesn't watch any of the product, I think including the shows he does.
How much does this guy weigh?
At one point, Beetlejuice, Jeff Jarrett, and Stevie Ray are all talking at the same time.
Oh, good.
Booker's going to help, but gets attacked by Scott Steiner, so Sting helps instead. Shane Douglas is dressed as a fan for some reason, attacks Sting with a baseball bat. Jeff Jarrett puts Beetlejuice in the figure four.
Great.
Jim Duggan wins a match against Sergeant AWOL with help from Reno. And I'm like, don't the Natural-Born Thrillers hate Team Canada? And they do, because there's a match later with Mike Sanders and Lance Storm. Like, guys, everyone's a heel, and you're fucking this up.
I think they're just assuming that you're not watching both shows, so you're not paying attention here.
Like, every fucking tag team in WWE is a heel right now, besides the MIA.
Sometimes I wonder if Thunder is just, like, it sort of feels like it's being run by the inmates in the asylum. Where it's like, is Jim Duggan just buddies with Reno? And it's like, oh, would it be cool if we're like together? But come on out. Does anybody care?
I mean, they faced each other there, but...
Does anybody care?
Lex Luger is still in the crowd.
Oh.
Not making an appearance. He didn't make the flight. He's not coming over that. He later gets interviewed by Stevie Ray and brawls with General Erection, but Stevie brands his interview. He's like, I'm starting a new segment. It's called Suckers Gots to Know.
Suckers Gots to Know. They do gots to know.
But then he later calls it Suckers Need to Know.
Suckers Have to Know. Suckers Must Know.
When he interviews Lex Luger, he goes, there's 5,000 viewers out there. And it's like, bud. Tony Schiavone, thinking on his feet, oh, he means 5,000 in one house.
Nope. Is he trying to say, like, the attendance?
I doubt it was. But Tony also claims there's 3 million people watching worldwide. I'm like, bud, you haven't hit that in a couple years.
No, there is not.
I had to verify they hit it at least once. They did. It was like, it's been like since 98.
Jeez.
Goldberg versus Chronic is kind of announced the pay-per-view. They do confirm that on this show. Scott Steiner kills the Young Dragons. Leia Meow and Medeja fight. As we noted on the last episode, my boy got to your boy.
Yeah.
we'll save that for when it's revealed in Nitro. However, they did call themselves two wild and crazy guys.
Ah, somebody watched Saturday Night Live. All right, cool.
As also noted last week, Chronic have a new gimmick, the APA.
Yeah,
if you pay them money, they'll beat somebody up.
Sure.
Buff Bagwell claims he wore a condom, a.k.a. his stuff. Yes.
Wait.
So now a condom is his stuff.
So Buff is
he always
stuff.
Wears
Buff
his stuff.
Buff is birth control?
You know, he wears his stuff when he goes down there, is what he said.
Down where?
Down under.
G'day.
So yeah, he can't be the father. David wants a DNA test and...
But I'm sorry, if I'm going to hearken back to my middle school health class, aren't condoms only 98% effective?
Well, I think that's why David wants a DNA test.
Yeah. You could still be the father, Buff. 2% chance.
Buff calls David insecure for believing a videotape. And I'm like, we really need to know what the fuck was on that tape.
Yeah.
Because it really got pitched as, this is a sex tape.
Yes. And if you're insecure based on what's on the tape, like, are you just gaslighting him?
So Buff then beats up David and the doctor that David brought out to get the blood test.
Oh, is this another instance of stealing blood? Or attempted robbery of blood?
Yes.
Oh, wow.
And in the main event, commentary actually notes the lax rules of WCW and how it's been going for 6 months.
Yeah.
Because Stevie Ray is watching the show, not understanding why the rules aren't being enforced. It's like, bud, you really got to watch the show.
I don't understand how he keeps like getting on commentary week after week.
I don't know.
Do they really need him that badly?
No. This show made me realize, oh my, do I like Scott Hudson?
Oh.
Scott Hudson is just, you know... He's a plain...
He's doing his job.
He's a bologna sandwich. You know, it's fine.
He's a little bit like a turkey sandwich.
Okay. The point stands if we're arguing over what kind of bland sandwich he is. But yeah, that's Thunder. AKA the Stevie Ray hour and a half.
Well, we're about to go into the Stevie Ray hour and a half here.
Yeah. Let's go our main show. Nitro in Australia, Down Under. A limo arrives. It's Jeff Jarrett as Surfer Sting.
Yeah, so Jeff Jarrett is going to be kind of going through this whole gimmick all night, where he is going to be pretending and convincing himself that he is Surfer Sting.
Yeah, he's just doing it for nobody.
No, and everyone is like, Jeff, what are you doing? Stop. He's like, no, man, I'm Sting.
Yeah, we'll get plenty of this as we go. We get some glamour shots of Australia leading into the lengthy Nitro opening. We have a different set this week, but I assume it's just the travel set. It looks more like Thunder, but...
Oh, yeah, it's definitely... Like, think about how far they had to travel all this stuff. Yeah, they condensed this as much as they possibly could.
In a throwback to our ECW episode we just did, Tony Schiavone attempts to welcome us, but is cut off by dubbed music, and we get no commentary for the entire entrance.
No.
The match is Ilik Skipper versus Rey Mysterio with Tigress. Ilik Skipper's theme is dubbed, and then... Rey Mysterio comes out the first couple seconds to Ilik Skipper's theme. He just comes out.
Ilik Skipper's theme is so dubbed that it bleeds into Rey Mysterio's entrance. This is the kind of stuff that makes me think that they did not actually edit in the music. They were just like, bleh.
Yeah. The fact is we hear Rey's theme start. So I think they also just started it late. Yeah.
Oh.
But as mentioned, it is Tony Schiavone and Stevie Ray on commentary alongside Mark Madden. This is my fucking... You know how there's a nightmare blood rotation, nightmare mic rotation?
Yes. What did you make of this rinky-dink ass bell?
Oh my god, it really sets the show off on the wrong tone. That it does. Like, literally.
Ha!
Yeah, it's just weird, wrong bell sound. I'm like, I don't like it.
For whom the bell tolls, not us.
Rey hits a Hurricane Rana early as Tigress kind of struggles to join commentary somehow.
Yeah, she's like making all kinds of jokes about like, I can't get my mic to work. Like, somebody turn my mic on. Or not jokes, but you know, yeah. She's... talking.
Well, as she's having issues, they have some miscommunication in the ring. It's like, oh, okay, just fumble around. Ilik Skipper hits a sunset flip powerbomb to the floor on Rey, and it does kind of look like Rey's head misses the mats.
Yeah.
Rey dodges a tope, hits a diving leg drop and running bulldog. Rey hits a springboard moonsault, but then gets dropped on the top rope, and Rey's crotched, but then kind of pivots himself so that he's sitting on the top rope facing the ring. Ilik Skipper tries to walk the top rope into a Hurricane Rana, and instead, basically has a fucking Yokozuna Banzai drop on Rey. Rey's legs get caught in the fucking ropes, and it's like, oh my dear Jesus. Like,
Yeah.
Skipper crashes to the floor. Rey's just hanging there. It's like, what the hell? Yeah.
This could have really fucked up Rey Mysterio.
Back in the ring, Ilik hits a back suplex and a corner headstand leg drop. Rey hits a rope-assisted Hurricane Rana and then just, like, a running clothesline, which I'm like, what the fuck? You don't do that? Mm. Like, it was clearly, like...
I think it was just that Rey was just absolutely desperate to get a good match out of Ilik Skipper, and he was just like, fuck it, I'm gonna do whatever it takes. I don't care if this move is not in my arsenal.
Well, I think it was more, Ilik Skipper was supposed to be doing something else, so Rey runs, like, well, I guess you're getting clotheslined, because...
Maybe that. I think it really did come down to Rey was trying to save the match.
Yeah, there were a lot of moments of Rey looking pissed off, like, hitting, like, a stomp, just, like, trying to, like, stall, like, no, this is not what we're doing right now.
Right.
Yeah, because right after that, I just write, lots of miscommunication, and Rey is pissed.
Rey just is desperate for this to end, it also seems. Like, he just wants this to be over. He's better than this, and he knows he's better than this.
Rey hits a springboard somersault plancha to the floor, followed by more miscommunication.
Ilik Skipper, let's just say it, he's just bad.
I'm like, is it jet lag? Like,
you can't blame jet lag on this, though. Like, no, he's just bad.
In an unintentional spot, I think, Rey basically does the Samoa Joe dodge, where you just walk out of the way, but he doesn't even walk out of the way, he just stands there and Skipper jumps over him.
Yeah.
He then hits a Bronco Buster, which commentary is arguing whether or not that's a face full of stuff or not.
Because once again, Stevie Ray does not watch the show.
Tori Wilson then suddenly is attacking Tigress, and then we cut to something stiff looking in the ring, and Ilik Skipper hits an overdrive for the win, and then we get the weird ring bell again.
This was just bad.
Yeah, this was disappointing. I was like, oh shit, these two guys could put on a good match.
I've never really made note of Ilik being a good wrestler, so I had zero faith going into this that he was going to do anything worthwhile.
We've given him best bit a couple times.
Have we?
Yeah.
I think it's did we give him best bit, or did we give the match that he was part of best bit?
I was counting that as one and the same. Because notably, we gave his match best bit, we did not give him MVP.
That, yeah. I think like he's one of those guys that can be carried to a good match if he's willing to play along. But here, it didn't seem like he had any conversation with Rey prior. It doesn't seem like if they did, he took any of it like to heart. He didn't. There was something wrong here, and I don't necessarily know. I can't put my finger on what it was.
Yeah, it's a bad sign when I go, Wow, Ray has more chemistry with Mark Jindrak and Sean O'Hare.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, this was just a big woof. Let's go backstage. Shane Douglas, Disco, and Alex Wright talk for about 4 seconds, and apparently Shane Douglas started saying something like, oh, you can't say that over here.
This is all just so muffled as well. Like, we can't hear the words that they're really saying. It's so muffled. It's so messed up. Even if Shane Douglas did say something offensive, we would never have known because we can't hear it.
Now, that said, Shane Douglas, heel, correct?
Would sure, you be- everybody's a heel.
Disco and Alex Wright are hanging out with him, so heel by association, also heel by various stories.
Sure.
That will come up in a minute.
Will it? Will it? Do we care?
The Natural Born Thrillers head to the ring without Reno or Kevin Nash. Mike Sanders says he's now the commissioner, and it's because Mr. Russo said so.
Yes, they are name-dropping Vince Russo. But also, Mike Sanders looks like he aged about 20 years between last week and this week.
Yeah, he doesn't look good.
His hairline, like, I don't want to, like, harp on a guy's hairline, but it has receded significantly since the last time he was on camera. I don't know if he does kind of, like, little hair fillers or what, but something happened here, and he looks really rough.
Mike Sanders makes a down underwear match between Tori and Tigress.
Yeah, he says that it is to capitalize on that little ringside brawl we just saw. Doesn't mention the match. He's just like, oh, I remember girls fighting. That was funny. What if they were in their underwear?
Yeah, they have to wear safari outfits, and there's a stripping element, which is unclear here, but clear later.
That is just, like, so stereotypical, too. Like, putting them in safari outfits in Australia. Like, come on.
Yeah, he says the last one standing in their bra and panties wins. But, like, that's not how that works. But.
No, you were trying to, like, make this something different. It's just a standard bra and panties match. Whoever gets stripped into their bra and panties first loses.
Yeah. Mike Sanders notes Mr. Russo as well as Mark Madden did earlier and just stalls for a while when we get a Russo sucks chant. Like, I feel like he thinks he's milking it. Like, oh, man, crowd's so hot. It's like, you're making this segment kind of shit.
Yeah.
By just standing there.
Yeah, because he's trying to feed into it. He's like, what do you mean Russo sucks? He doesn't suck.
Or a cue is missed because the cat then comes out with Miss Jones and is like, you're not the commissioner, but man, you're doing a great job. It's like, what?
Is he not the commissioner or what?
So he's like, all right, I'm going to come beat you up. And then kind of realizes, oh, there's 6 guys in the ring. Maybe I don't do that.
He comes in the ring. He doesn't really come in the ring to beat him up. He comes in the ring to celebrate and like do a little dance.
Well,
I almost wanted Sonny Ono to show up with his fucking dancing shoes.
Well, first he's like, hey, we can work together and put on a great show for these fans. It's like,
that was where it felt super house showy.
Yeah. Kat says he wants to dance. So Sanders tells him to get in the ring, which I'm like, okay, it's going to be a beatdown. But the cat then brings out the MIA, and there's a standoff, and then Sanders has to hit the cat's music. The cat starts dancing.
Yeah.
Everyone lets him, and the cat decks Mike Sanders.
And Mike Sanders, bless him, did seem down to dance with the cat.
I don't know if it was to dance with him, but he seemed fine working together with him.
Yeah, I don't know if Mike Sanders seemed fine working with him.
I think the problem is this requires acting chops from anyone involved, and no one has it. So everyone brawls, the Thrillers get cleared from the ring, which should be the end of the segment, but no, Sanders and the cat then threaten each other, so I'm like, is there a match later? Who knows?
Maybe. But again, this is like that house show energy, is like nothing is planned, nothing makes any sense, there might be a match here, because like we might just need to fill time, I don't know. Why can't we just announce things? Especially when the show is already happening, I get the marketing mindset of like, I mean, I don't agree with it, but I get it. Or don't announce what matches are happening before the show is aired. But when the show is on, be like, this is coming up.
Yeah. Also, it's a pre-tape show.
Yeah.
Which I don't have any evidence for, but there are some cuts to the audience that just looks like they trimmed a little bit. Like, especially when they like cut to 2 different groups of the audience. I'm like, it feels like you're stalling to like.
Yeah, trim you something. Called that out while we were watching too, but. Again, I'd like to remind you about the first match that we watched.
Yeah.
If that was a thing, that match would have been cut around a little bit more.
In my favorite 10-second segment of the night, backstage, the Boogie Knights are just both standing at individual mirrors, just dancing.
Yeah, what the fuck?
Just doing the Alex Wright all elbows dance.
Just throwing bows.
I'm like, oh, okay.
And then, Nick, what happens after that?
Fucking.
So, we cut to somebody arriving. A lady, a blonde lady, a lady that I was told was gone, has done her final appearance in WCW. We would never be seeing her again. We said goodbye to this lady. Who's here?
To be fair, I said she was going to reappear eventually.
that this is not eventually.
Fucking Stacy's here. Because this story doesn't go anywhere. And everyone's like, well, she's done. She keeps not being done, guys.
She just wanted to go to Australia.
No, I do want to note, anytime I've said this, none of you fuckers tweeted in going, hey, she shows back up eventually.
Oh, nobody knows. But it is becoming a thing now. Whenever you say, this is the end, say goodbye, I bet we see fucking Hooventude again.
Oh, I keep checking like 3 weeks out going, all right, like control F Stacy on someone's report. Does she show up? I don't believe she appears for Halloween Havoc, which am I going to fucking interfere in that match, even though I'm pretty sure she doesn't.
Saying that people are done in WCW because they're just not.
I want to know when to say goodbye to people. Anyway.
We'll say goodbye when the company goes under. How about that?
Jeff Jarrett as Sting. Just, what the fuck was this segment? We get a guy looking into the camera going, where's the Stinger? And then Jarrett walks in and just has a chat with a guy, has a chat with two, caterers, and...
He's really committing to this Sting bit.
Yeah, he keeps going like, oh, I'm past it. I don't love the business anymore.
I have no heart.
I just...
There's only one way that this gets, paid off.
Yeah.
It's so obvious and clear. I feel like, again, this is just an excuse for Jeff Jarrett to dress up like Surfer Sting. I think Jeff Jarrett just liked Surfer Sting.
Oh, he does it a couple. I know he does it in TNA, too.
Yeah, he just likes this look.
He does it at least once. He might do it twice.
I think deep down, Jeff Jarrett's just a fanboy.
Let's go back to the ring. It's a tag team title match. It is the Boogie Knights versus Sean O'Hare and Mark Jindrak, who you saw a clip of him from like 2004, 2005, and you were like... Who is this man?
Looks very different from what he is in this match. And he's hot. He's ripped. You could do laundry on those abs.
So this match is heel versus heel, which will come up in one of my favorite spots of the night.
Yeah?
So Wright works over Jindrak, but runs into a soft tilt-a-whirl slam. Jindrak does the Alex Wright dance, but Disco just comes in, hits him with a duck. Wright hits a snap suplex, which you really liked, followed by diving elbow from Disco. O'Hare knees Disco running the rope. So, yeah, again, both teams are just cheating. The Thrillers start working over Disco. Wright crotches O'Hare, and the Boogie Knights hit a combo Russian leg sweep and diving dropkick. Not to be outdone, the Thrillers hit a weird double atomic drop and then a double dropkick. Sean O'Hare is holding, I think it's Disco, and just, sticks his foot out and basically kicks Mark Jindrak. It's like, that's a tag.
Oh, I did love the kick tag. Yeah. That was a good little bit.
Yeah, Jindrak hits a springboard clothesline, and shortly after, Disco gets the hot tag, but because it's two heel teams, the crowd doesn't pop.
Don't think it's because it's two heel teams, Nick.
Well, Disco hits a running neck breaker, and in the middle of it, in the ropes, he literally stops to do the hands like a, come on, for fuck's sake. Like, come on, cheer. It's like, no, this is meant to be a spot where people cheer, and they don't.
Yeah, because no one likes Disco.
Yeah, because Disco's a heel and no one likes him.
It doesn't matter that they're both heel teams. No one's likable on either of these teams right now. It doesn't matter.
That's my point.
Even if one of these were pitched as faces, they're not good wrestlers. They're not interesting people.
Anyway.
It doesn't matter that they're two heel teams. They're just bad wrestlers.
Things get messy as Stevie Ray will not shut up and going, who's the legal man? 4 seconds go by. Who's the legal man?
Look up. Watch the match.
We get a ref bump. Disco hits a chart buster, and a new ref comes in and counts the pin. So your new tag team champions, the Boogie Knights.
For now.
Yep. Mike Sanders comes out and is like, well, that ref bump should have been a DQ. So it's like, all right, what's happening? Are they the champions? They're not. The other natural born Thrillers come in, beat up Disco and Alex Wright. And then Mike Sanders is like, all right,
restart the match.
And Jindrak and O'Hare just pin them. Yeah. No moves. Like, oh.
Kinda. This is really fun.
Yeah. Really took the wind out of the sails there.
Yeah. Having a really good time with the natural born Thrillers. More like natural born vibe killers.
Yeah. And look, I'm gonna keep on with this. I'm sorry. Of all the teams to screw over, why did you pick an unlikable team? Well, say that. They're a heel team, but they're unlikable. It's like, we literally did this last week.
What team would you have liked them to do? Who is likable?
MIA.
They are not likable.
Some people like, we don't, but I don't know.
There are no likable teams. Everyone's a heel
They're
right
meant
now.
If to that's be what we're sympathetic.
Gonna, if that's what we're going to go off of, that it needs to be heel face. We don't have any faces. Everyone is a heel. That is the whole thing.
MIA are faces.
Kinda.
They are faces.
Not really. They're more dopey. They're not good guys. They're just idiots.
I don't know how to tell you. It's a binary thing.
It's not, though. It hasn't been since we started watching WCW. It has not been black and white.
I mean, look, they're not sympathetic either, but like Ray and Conan, like people like them. Why? Like, there's so many, not so many teams, but like there are teams you could have done this with. But my point is, yeah, last week we did the same thing with Elix Skipper, who's also a heel people don't like, and you screwed him over by losing the Cruiserweight title. I'm like, why do we keep doing this with the Natural Born Thrillers every time?
Because they keep trying to push the Natural Born Thrillers to be this big powerhouse group.
Like, guys, do a triple threat match. That's how you get the tag titles from one heel team to another. That's how you do that.
But, like, to me, no one is a face. There are no faces in WCW right now.
Sting?
He's also so, like, not black and white. Like, he's also, like, yes, he's against the major group, whatever, but he's still kind of a dick, too.
Goldberg.
Goldberg's barely here. And when he is, he does a 10-second match.
Booker T.
Maybe. Maybe Booker T. Yeah, I'll give you Booker T.
By the way, just because someone isn't a good face doesn't mean they aren't a face.
I recognize that they aren't, like, good faces or whatever, but they're also just not coming across as faces, to me, at least.
Yeah, that is kind of the problem with the lax rules as well, is everyone cheats in every match. Yeah.
Yes, there's that. I'm not saying that it is like, I can't tell because I'm bad. I also think it's kind of the point that they don't want it to be black and white, heel, face, or at least that was the goal for a while. But I don't think that it is like, oh, well, you're a bad face, therefore you're not a face. Like, I think that it's just like bad booking. I think it's bad writing. I think it's bad character development.
I mean, one, yes, but the problem is when you have people coming out regularly and shitting on like the local, like shitting on the fans and local crowd and all that.
Yeah, like, those are easy heels. Like, obviously, the Canadians are heels. Obviously.
But I feel like Disco was doing this 2 weeks ago too.
Not to the same extent.
Well, let's move on a little bit. We get Stacy headed to the ring, and Goldberg arrives on a fat hog.
Yeah, where do you get a fat hog? Do you have to rent that? Didn't drive it here.
Doesn't Mark Madden say he did?
He does, yeah.
We get a random, like, ad for an animal sanctuary. It's like, here's the Nitro Girls playing with some kangaroos.
Yeah, they went to go hang out with kangaroos.
Then we get Jeff Jarrett doing a fake MasterCard ad.
Sure.
Why?
I don't know what Jeff Jarrett is doing tonight. We've said this, like, four times now. It's just weird. And it doesn't really come to fruition.
We then get, I'm pretty sure it's going to be Emily's worst bit. We get Mark Madden bringing out Stacy Keibler.
Yep. Sure does.
Stacy comes out and they have her in like the tiniest little prosthetic. Like, she's showing.
Yeah, they put a pillow on her.
Shirt. Yeah, prosthetic. That's giving me too much credit.
A cushion.
Yeah.
The chair cushion from back in catering or something.
Mark Madden's been like, can I touch your belly? She's like, no.
Ew, no, don't touch me.
Mark Madden asks Stacy point blank, who's the father?
And she says, it's kind of none of your business.
Yeah, says it all the fans too. It's like, yeah.
Stop asking. It's none of any of your business.
She does tell David, like, you need to fucking stop. You're being too much. You're being too loud.
Yes, she does call David out. And like, he eventually does come to the ring too. And she says it to his face.
Well, she also does say before, it's like, I made a mistake. I still love you. And I'm like, do you? Because I remember
why?
Like, before everything, like with the wedding, like you didn't really seem into the whole thing. We always kind of wondering, like, why are you with him?
Well, she liked him before they were like having their wedding. I don't know. I don't think that she does. Well, I'm not going to say I don't think she loves him. I think that she can do better. The character of Stacy Keibler can do better. I know Stacy Keibler and David Flair did date for a while or are still dating at this point. Yeah. I don't know.
I think your sentiment stands.
Yeah. But I think she could do better. She does do better. It's, you know, who cares?
I'm waiting for a George Clooney run-in. We got David Arquette. Come on.
No, but before David Flair comes out, we get another Sucker's Gots to Know from Stevie on commentary. When the Who is the Father is asked. Sucker's Gots to Know.
Well, yeah, because if we're skipping to David Flair coming out, you're skipping over the worst part of this segment of Mark Madden going, well, maybe there's another reason why you won't tell us who the father is.
Well, you whore.
Yeah, maybe you don't remember because you were drunk.
You were
or
drunk.
Or maybe you've slept with so many guys, you don't even know who it is.
Yeah.
It's like, oh. Like,
if you guys want textbook slut shaming. Here it is.
Yeah.
There is no coyness about this. There is no like, oh, that's not really slut shaming. Like, that's just what it is. No, this is textbook blatant slut shaming.
So now out comes David Flair and immediately ducks a Stacy hug.
Oh, yeah. Like a hard swerve from Stacy. Like, but she also comes in with that like very fake animated, like two arms out hug. Like, yeah. You knew that it wasn't going to be, that wasn't going to connect.
It's one of the smoothest motions I've seen David Flair do in a ring. But the first thing he asks Stacy is like, what is you like about Buff, huh? What is it? The muscles, the hat? And David, I have all the same questions. What is it you like about Buff Bagwell, huh? Huh?
He's a nice guy.
No, he's not.
To her.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I'm like, no, that brief period where we thought Buff was good turned out to all be fake.
He seemed nice to her.
Yeah, he wore his stuff.
Yes, he wore a condom because he's respectful.
So for some reason, David wants her to take a blood test. Mark Madden immediately points out, idiot, we know she's the mother.
Yeah, that was a very dumb line.
So David's like, oh, you don't want me to do it. Are you the father? And it's like, Christ. Madden immediately backs off and David tries to steal her blood.
Yes.
So who comes out, Emily? Who comes out?
My MVP comes out. My hero. The one shining light in this whole fucking company right now.
Who is it, Emily?
It doesn't matter how much they massacred him. Crowbar will always be my boy.
That 70s Crowbar comes
out. He
looks
terrible, but I still love him and he's still a good man.
State of him, because he came out and you just like stopped.
Yeah. Because he's in like a crushed velvet leisure suit looking thing with the top hat. Like he looks silly.
It's not a top hat. It's like the... Oh.
Or a fedora, maybe.
Yeah, was that like a patty cap kind of thing? Or?
I don't know. Some sort of hat.
Some silly looking thing.
But he came out with good intentions. He came out to stop the blood robbery and talk David off of a cliff.
He also has to like take off part of the outfit like, it's me.
Yes, he has to reveal his identity to David. It's still me.
When the fuck's DDP come back?
Oh God, does he come back?
Yeah.
Oh geez. Maybe he'll be the one to save both of our boys.
I know he joins the let's bring back Scott Hall train.
Oh, of course. But no, Crowbar seems to be the only person with the right mind about him in this conversation.
Is Crowbar a face?
In my heart. Yes, he is a face. He's never given me any reason to be a heel. Like, he actually knows how to be a character and convey heel and face. Like, no one else in the company knows how to do it. No one knows. He's a good person.
Yeah, so Crowbar is like, go to the back, cool off, like, you're being crazy.
But I remember he did that at the wedding, too, where he was, like, cheesing next to David the whole time. He was the best man, and he was so happy for David, and he was the first one to console him when everything went south. Like, Crowbar's a good person.
Yeah, no Daphne tonight.
Yeah, she's kind of falling
he
off.
He was sad that her and Ozzy went early.
Yeah, who the fuck is Ozzy?
The boyfriend.
He's not here, though. No. Like, who the fuck, as in, like, yeah. Who are you to the story, the company?
So David goes to leave under Crowbar's suggestion, but instead turns around, blindsides him, and my boy comes out to save your boy. Mike Awesome makes the save and clears David from the ring. It's like, okay.
But this also apparently lines up a match?
We get an interview later that'll do that.
Oh, okay. God,
but I mean, in reality, it probably should have just been here. It felt weird to leave this and then...
Yeah.
Especially considering both these guys basically wrestle in the clothes they were in this segment.
Right, right.
So it's not like, okay, well, you know, Jeff Jarrett's in pants, he needs to go change. Like, nope, they both wear this.
I barely even remember there being a promo where they set this up.
It was 8 seconds.
Yeah. You blink, you miss it.
We then see Tori and Tigress in safari outfits headed to the ring.
Tigress looks pissed.
Yeah.
She looks angry at the world.
We then get Pamela Paulshock backstage with Jeff Jarrett. You're not fooling anybody.
She straight up asks Jeff Jarrett, have you lost your mind? Like, the answer is yes. Like, look at him.
Well, I love the kayfabe of this promo because Jeff Jarrett is trying to be Sting.
Mm.
But his Jarrett-isms keep slipping through. Like, he's so Jeff Jarrett, he can't pretend. He's just that much of a prick that
he's
like...
He's that much of a Jeff Jarrett.
Yes. He cannot keep the act going for an interview.
No.
He sees Pamela, I call it like Blondie or...
Oh, yeah. I can't remember exactly like how that all goes. But yeah, he keeps doing stuff like that. Like, he'll say the Jeff Jarrettism. Yeah. Like, yeah, I mean, no.
He says he's going to the ring to sign autographs for $15 a pop.
Yeah, so he's going to set up a table in the ring. And I guess his plan was to invite people up to the ring to get the autographs.
Honestly, most of the merch that was there probably cost more than $15. So actually, it wasn't a bad deal. Yeah, so we'll get more on that in a bit. Because first we get a Halloween Havoc ad.
Yeah, don't forget, Halloween Havoc is coming up soon. Like, I keep forgetting that it's October.
Yeah, I think we got two more shows in between.
Yeah, but still, like, that is the pay-per-view we are building to right now. Is the big Halloween Havoc. Like, to me, that's a big pay-per-view for them. That's, like, one of the big three for them.
Yes. So, out of curiosity, what are the other...
Starcade and probably Bash's Beach.
Yeah, pretty much... I don't know how much they designed to be like that, but they pretty much were always doing big stuff at those three.
But it doesn't feel like Halloween Havoc is in, 3 weeks?
I think part of that is just because of how prominent the Russo stuff has been for us, but also... Mm-hmm. In programming, it doesn't feel like they're headed towards pay-per-view.
No, that's what I'm saying. It doesn't feel like that.
Let's go to our Down Underwear match, which I'm realizing every time I wrote that, I wrote wear like a location and not wear like clothes.
Underwear. Yeah.
But yeah, it's Tigress versus Tori. This match is pretty much as good as you expect.
Yeah, it's a bra and panties match.
Tigress throws and drags Tori around the ring. Tori gets her knees up on a splash and tries to take the top off of Tigress. But Tigress has tied it off in the front.
Yeah. So surprise, Tigress wins. Like, you're not getting that off of her. But well, they also don't really try.
Well, they count that as off.
Do they?
Yes.
It didn't come off as
she's
off.
She's still in her skirt at the end.
It's felt like they were still making the shirt stay on.
I don't know.
Doesn't matter. Tigress won.
Yeah, Tigress gets her foot up in the corner, strips Tori's shorts. We then get a face full of stuff, which prompts a lively discussion and commentary with Stevie Ray. Yeah, it's like, wait, I thought you said it was Bronco Buster. It's like, no, when she does it, bless Tony Schiavone. I don't know how he doesn't swear more during these.
Yeah. So you know when someone does like a Uranagi or a, you know, whatever.
Dave Meltzer does.
That's a bookend. Like, moves have different names. You know how Nick keeps calling the second rope Brett's rope? It's not actually called Brett's rope, guys. It's just a name.
Tigers strips Tori's top, wins. Shane Douglas comes out to cover Tori and then confronts Tigress. And I'm like, she didn't really do anything dastardly, dude. Like, Conan comes out, makes the save, and actually does a decent Shane Douglas impression.
Yes, he does. But this was confusing, though, because Tigress is Ray's girlfriend.
Yes, and I want to say they've already announced that these four are going to have a tag match at Halloween Havoc.
Why?
Well, my guess is, originally, they were going to have the finals of the Ray and Hoovy best of five at Halloween Havoc, so they booked another match, and then the incident.
Does Billy Kidman come back soon? Because we can put him with Ray.
He's
that'd be a good
barely
match.
Even been gone, but yeah. I know he does end up back with them, so.
He can fill the time.
Then go backstage, the segment of Mike Sanders and Big Vito. They just kind of insult each other. And
yeah, so this segment is another product of the audio not really making sense, not really working, so because we hear this happen, but the music from the match is still happening under it. So what is actually being said is kind of lost, but it ends up just being like Mike Sanders talking shit to Vito and Vito talking shit to Mike Sanders. And then Mike Sanders being like, you know what? I'll put you in a match. And Vito's like, yeah, I can take any match.
Yeah. The fact that we heard the last 2/3 of this made me realize we didn't need to hear the first third.
No. But like the fact that it was happening.
Yeah.
They can't get their production right for 1 week, and they're gonna blame it on, oh well, we're in Australia, everything's so different, all of the buttons are upside down. Like, they're gonna pull that shit if anybody were to say anything.
Let's move on. We get Jeff Jarrett coming out as Sting. He does not come out to Man Called Sting. He comes out to Metallica, which is dubbed, so it's
Man
the other theme.
Sting. I wish they had he had come out to Man Called Sting. That would've been cool.
Yeah, they probably didn't have the file, and they thought the idea too late.
Probably.
He brings Dave Penzer in the ring, and also in the ring is a bunch of like memorabilia for him to sign and shirts, posters, yada,
yada. I genuinely thought that somebody was going through this.
Jarrett makes Penzer introduce him as Sting, and then as he's leaving, he's like, all right, come on, keep going. It's like, give it up for the Stinger.
All right.
Jarrett says this is the real Sting before he lost his heart, and Sting's going to retire after Jarrett beats his ass at Halloween Havoc.
The whole point of him being Surfer Sting is that this is before Sting lost his heart. What does that mean?
It basically means...
What is he trying to say, I guess?
He doesn't care anymore.
Yeah. Are you watching the same show that I'm watching?
Yeah.
Yeah. Why would he care?
So Sting tells the kids to come in the ring for autographs, and then we just see a rope just drop down. And I don't know what happened, because Jared just fully turns around and looks at it like, goes, well, what? Yeah, like the surprise element of Sting coming down was very much undone.
I mean, I think that the rope drop was kind of part of the surprise, because like that coming out did get a little bit of a pop from the crowd, too.
You know what else we got a pop? Sting.
Okay, well, that's how you do it safely. And Sting does get a pop. Like, he has to come down safely somehow. So announcing his entrance without, like, hitting his music. Like, that was the big reveal of, like, yeah. Sting's here.
And he has the quick release, like, single, like, mm-hmm. belt harness. Because he unhooks and then he does the rest of the segment in the harness.
In the harness, yeah.
And Sting works over Jared around ringside. Gets crotched by Jared getting in the ring. I did get a little bit of a laugh of Mark Madden explaining in his world, because Jarrett's the real Sting, so who is Sting then? And he jokes that it's NWO Sting, it's Jeff Farmer, which I'm like, all right, that's kind of funny.
Yeah, I saw what he was trying to do, but just the constant back and forth of like, that's not the real Sting. It was very El Grande Americano without the charisma.
Well,
without the fun.
The other problem is, we have two people on commentary that don't know when to end a bit.
Correct.
Because Stevie Ray refuses to let Mark Madden have the last word on this, and Mark Madden refuses to have the last word on this.
Yes.
So they're just going the whole time, he's in Japan. Oh, maybe he walked. He's not.
Yeah, exactly. Give it up to Wade Barrett. He knows when to like stop and when to keep going with a bit.
Jared hits some Sting moves, suplexes Sting through a table. Sting immediately gets up, gets the better of Jared, hits a Stinger splash, and then locks in the Scorpion Deathlock. But again, this is not a match. This is just a segment. Like, this goes long. Sting won't break the hold. So three refs come down to just have a chat with him.
Yeah, I wrote down that they force him to break, but they really don't. They just kind of look at him and go, no, man, say what are you doing? Stop it. Hey, stop that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's all they do. And I mean, it's Jarrett, so they probably care so much.
Yeah, they kind of want him to get choked out.
So yeah, he eventually lets go and that's the segment. Backstage, Scott Steiner finds Jarrett. He's like, what happened? Oh, Sting jumped me.
Oh, yeah. He finally drops the gimmick here. He was like, yeah, Sting jumped me. Sting's here now, I guess. Sting's pissed. And poor Steiner's like, what?
See, I feel like you could have done something funny of Steiner sees Jarrett as Sting and doesn't realize it's Jarrett and beats him up. Mm. Like, at least hits him once or twice. Like, no, it's me.
That would have been funny. That would have been funny.
Because, you know, Steiner is stupid, so it works.
Yeah.
We then get Mike Sanders coming out to the ring. No top on him.
Breaking his mother's heart.
He brings out Kevin Nash as his backup for, I'm like, is this, I guess this is a match? A brawl? Who knows?
I guess it's like his tag partner.
Well, the cat then comes out with a mic and is like, I have a partner as well. The world champion, Booker T.
See, these two entrances, again, is where it comes back to house show, where it's like a match that no one cares about, but let's make them care by showing them their favorites.
Yeah, just like at such a random point in the show. Mm-hmm. The first, like, mention of the champion.
Right. And like, he just kind of, like, randomly shows. Like, randomly walks out.
Yeah, so our match is Mike Sanders and Kevin Nash versus The Cat and Booker T. Nothing on the line. I was kind of like, I thought there was going to be, like, commissionerships on the line or something.
Yeah, maybe, I mean, it should have been, the road, but it's a house show. Nothing's going to be on the line. Also, this match is, like, 99.9% Cat Sanders, which makes it suck.
We may have seen him earlier, but we cut to Sam Greco in the crowd.
Yeah, who is that?
He's a kickboxer, mixed martial artist guy, like, shoot fighter.
Okay, so he could actually fuck any of these guys up.
Okay, Emily, while we're on the topic of shoot fighters.
Oh, no.
Do you want to recall you getting jump scared during Friends?
Oh, yes, I do.
And the fact that I walked in as this happened.
This is happening. So I've been on like a Friends rewatch. I'm in season 4 now, but this is in season 3. In season 3, Monica is dating Pete, who is a millionaire, who's played by, I can't remember his name, but
Jon Favreau.
Yes. I was like, he's in every fucking Marvel movie. What is his name? So she's dating Jon Favreau, and he wants to be an Ultimate Fighting champion. So he's training, and he goes to his first match in UFC. And
which they actually have the rights to. I was like, oh.
I know.
I guess free publicity, so yeah.
Friends also was making buco fucking bucks by season 3.
Yeah.
So he has his first match, and I can't remember what his name was in the show.
No.
It was.
Okay. It was straight up.
So his first match in UFC, this random fucker Pete, is against Tank Abbott. Straight up named Tank Abbott. When I watched this the first time when I was like 8 years old, had no fucking clue who Tank Abbott was. I haven't rewatched the show in a very long time. So when Tank Abbott came out, I was like, hold on.
I didn't even catch it the first time.
No, I didn't catch it the first time. We had to back it up, and then Nick came downstairs and saw this happening. I was like, that's
I saw it, you didn't react, and I went, babe, what? And you're like, wait, what?
Tank Abbott's in Friends, I guess. Fuck that guy. He won the match.
Yeah. Sorry, we were saying how we have no idea who Sam Greco is.
Yeah.
Yeah, neither does Stevie Ray. He doesn't pretend how to put him over at all. Cat tags in, hits strikes, and denies an aloha. Nash knocks Cat down from the apron, and Sanders hits an elbow drop and tags in Nash. Nash hits a sidewalk slam, knocks Booker off the apron, and in a spot we always are just confuzzled at.
Confuzzled.
Kevin Nash is right next to Mike Sanders.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the ref's back is turned, so he wouldn't see it anyway, but he does the self high five to be like, there was a tag.
Self high five.
But, like, you are within spitting distance. Like,
not even spitting distance. If you breathed wrong, you would get something in this guy's eye.
So, yeah, I don't know why you felt the need to fake it there, no, but sure.
Just tag him. Just touch him.
Because it's not like they did any double team moves. No. Like, Booker distracted the ref meant nothing.
Nope. Plus, the rules are so lax.
Sanders works the cat over to We Want Hall chants. I forget the context for it, but Tony Schiavone implies it will cost $15,000 to fly home from Australia.
No.
Oh, because if Stevie gets involved, he'll be fired.
Oh, right.
And so he'd have to pay his own way back. Yeah.
But, like, also, no.
Yeah.
There's no way. I recognize that plane tickets are expensive, and that's a expensive fucking flight. But there's no way $15,000.
Like, maybe, like, $1,500.
Yeah, that would make more sense. It would still suck, but that would make sense for a, like, one-way listing.
We're doing a quick search. In 2025, what's your guess?
From where to where?
Atlanta to Sydney.
Probably, like, $2,500?
Cheapest ones are just under $1,000.
Really?
Well, I guess the... Oh, round trip?
Wow. Round trip for under $1,000?
Yeah.
Whoa, want to go to Australia?
Back to the match. Kat makes the hot tag to Booker. Kevin Nash just comes up with no tag. Stevie Ray is incensed. Booker hits a scissor kick, spin-a-rooney. Booker goes for the bookend on Mike Sanders. The cat goes, no, I want him. So
yeah.
Booker just drops him. Cat comes in.
He had the finishing move on it. Like, why not? Yeah.
Hits his spinning kick, and Kevin Nash is standing on the apron while this whole thing happens. Does not come in at all. Because the cat gets the pin. And, like, Booker has to kind of fight him, but...
I mean, Nash feigns it a little bit. He's like, oh, I could.
Like, it just reminded me of, like, the old, like, video game animations for getting the ring. Oh, it's too slow. You actually can't. Kevin Nash's animations are too slow. He doesn't have the time to get the ring.
He does. His animations are too slow in real life.
But, yeah, so Kat and Booker win.
Sure.
And post-match, Kat gets in the face of Sam Greco, and... We get an accidental match cut because Mike Sanders hits the cat from behind right as we cut to Scott Steiner is in the ring hitting Booker with a pipe.
Yeah. Where did this even come from?
I don't know. But Steiner actually hits the ropes on the first swing and then it's like, all right. I guess he already hit him too before because
I guess
we don't know what the hell we're doing. Again, it's a pre-taped show.
Yeah, we can edit. But I mean, they're not really, even though it's a pre-taped show, they're not doing spots twice.
No.
So if it's just a shitty match, they don't have a lot to edit around.
We don't need to see Kat get taken out. Yeah. Just cut to the ring where Steiner's there.
Yeah, no.
As Steiner is beating down Booker, Tony Giovanni's like, Stevie, you can't get involved.
Did he even get up?
I think he's verbally saying, oh, I got to go in.
Okay.
Steiner then grabs a mic and says he's going to kick his ass at Halloween Havoc and he wants Sting tonight.
Okay.
So we have a main event, but also a very house show of guy comes out to interfere, announces the main event.
Yes. This is such house show energy. I've been to the show. I feel like I've seen the show.
Any thoughts on the actual match?
No. Yeah. It was far too much Mike Sanders cat. Like, as little as I want to see Kevin Nash in the ring, I would have preferred Kevin Nash versus Booker T.
And the weird, no, don't bookend him. Like, he can hit the move.
That was stupid.
Well, he can hit the move, and then you can also pick him up and hit your move. Like,
that was the thing. Like, what would it have hurt if Booker actually hit the bookend, set him up for the pin, and was just like, here's the pin, take the win, have it. What would that have made a difference?
Pride.
But you still would have gotten the pin.
I don't know, man. Speaking of pride, Pamela is backstage with David Flair.
She's mad at him.
He cuts a quiet, relaxed promo being like, Mike Awesome, I want to face you in a hardcore match. Like, who? I think you're the crazy guy. What are you doing?
Is that what David said here?
Yeah.
I totally miss that because Pamela has given him shit for putting Stacy in danger, even though she's pregnant. I didn't even hear what David had to say because it was fucking, so like, whispers quiet. It. Wow.
Borderline fucking Sid over here.
Oh, no. Sid would have way more heart.
We then go to commercial and come back because it was a weird cut for us because it's just like Pamela's with David Flair. Then Pamela's with Vito.
Yeah, this is where we confirm. So the whole episode, we were like, okay, so Vito must be the one going against Goldberg. That's the only thing that makes sense. They were alluding, I guess.
Emily, I want to note you are correct, but you're giving our level of interest in that too much credit. And we were just like, okay, so there's the Vito match and there's a Goldberg match. I guess they're facing each other?
Yeah, that.
It was very much a...
But it was never announced. It was never announced. It was just we saw Goldberg arrive and we saw Mike Sanders put Vito up against mystery opponent. In this segment with Pam, Vito was like, I can take Goldberg, I'll fuck up his streak, whatever. I'm like, oh, okay. So I guess match against Goldberg. There it is.
I did kind of like this promo because it was like I don't got a problem with him. You know, we're two guys like going to work. You know, I think I can take him. About to make a name for myself. I'm like,
okay.
Good little babyface promo from Vito.
Sure.
I don't believe it's going to happen.
It but does not.
Yeah. Spoilers. He's like, all right, like, you know, we're going to have a good match, put on a good show for the fans, and then we're going to shake hands.
So house show.
And we go to that. It is Goldberg versus Big Vito in a career-threatening match.
Is it career-threatening?
If Goldberg loses, he's fired, so.
Oh, right. I forgot that was a stipulation. If he loses his streak, he loses his job.
Commentary points out how impractical him getting his streak back is.
I missed that. At this point in the show, I have tuned out commentary because I'm so sick of Stevie Ray.
Yeah, they're like, I mean, he's gonna, like, there's like 50 guys on the roster. He's gonna have to beat everybody three times. It's like, yes.
Yeah.
This isn't gonna work. That's why you guys faked it in the first one. Vito attacks Goldberg, getting in the ring. Goldberg no-sells a mafia kick. Spears Vito, hits jackhammer, pins Vito, 4-0.
Yep.
So we're not pretending any shows happened in between right now.
No.
Which is how you need to inflate that.
But this is also like, this was a bell-to-bell match. This is an announced match. Remember that.
Yeah. I think this is going to be the majority of our Goldberg matches going forward. I think this exact combination here. Because Goldberg goes to leave, doesn't shake his hand.
Wow. No. Wow, what a jerk.
The disrespect.
Heel.
He goes to leave. Johnny the Bull then sneaks in the back of the ring, hits kendo stick shots to Vito. Goldberg sees this or hears this. Comes back, attempts to hit a pump handle suplex on Johnny the Bull, but like, Johnny the Bull doesn't know how to take that properly.
No. But I also don't really, like, I get that Vito and Johnny the Bull used to be tag partners. I get that. Are we still on that? Is that still why Johnny the Bull beat up Vito?
I mean, they've been just doing this for a bit now. Vito's kind of feuding with Natural Born Thrillers. Months. Yeah.
We get it. You guys broke up. It doesn't, we can move on.
We still got Maria maybe coming back.
Okay. We're not ever seeing Maria again. But yeah, Goldberg comes back to like, no, this was a clean match. Don't come in here and vulture on my killing, you know?
Yep. He hits a sloppy pump handle suplex, Johnny the Bull, hits a spear, hits a jackhammer, Mickey J counts the pin, so it's 5-0.
This wasn't a match.
No, neither was last, or actually, no, I guess.
I feel like these have all been matches except for this one.
Yeah, well, last week it was the handicap match where he pinned two people, so it...
But it was still a match.
I forget it, yeah.
It was still bell to bell. Well, this was just...
Yeah.
Bell.
Then we get Chronix music hitting.
But they don't even come down!
They come out to the stage, look at them, that's it.
I thought we were about to get 7-0 here.
We gotta save them for pay-per-view. You gotta pay for that match.
Why? Who's paying for Chronix versus Goldberg?
Emily, that's the main event of Halloween
Havoc. No, it's not.
Yep.
That's terrible.
Yep.
What are the buy rates on Halloween Havoc?
By the way, also not the first time I told you that. Just very forgettable.
Hey, you know what? I bet those buy rates are killer.
Moving on, we get,
yeah?
We get a car arriving. Okay.
A Mercedes, please.
Our next match is Mike Awesome versus David Flair in a hardcore match.
Sure. You know the one that he just whispered about 30 seconds ago?
Once again, it's like, all right, we've seen everybody here before.
Yep.
Awesome lays out David early on and just pops his top off like, He's looking real jacked, baby.
He doesn't want to be that 70s guy. He wants to be fucking Mike Awesome.
Awesome grabs a trash can. David delays him by begging off, and Mike Awesome stalls and is like, too late, and then gets pulled into the turnbuckle. David hits trash can shots and goes up top, but gets thrown off the top rope. Awesome hits a splash and throws David into the corner, who does a flare turnbuckle spot, like, just fully taking his dad's stuff here.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome throws David into the crowd, and we hold on David. And then we just see Mike Awesome, like, jumping from, like, almost out of frame into the crowd onto David Flair.
The poor people in the front row, they really got him. They got it. They got a 4D experience today.
Awesome hits a chair shot to the head of David, and back in the ring, David hits a low blow. Flair hits some hard chops in the corner, which just seems to piss off Mike Awesome. David does a Flair strut, turns around into a clothesline. Awesome goes up top. Fully stands on the top rope, like, for a good bit.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
Hits a diving splash. Awesome bomb pins David Flair. And I'm like, you know what? This wasn't bad.
It was fine.
It might be match of the night.
Oh, God. Wasn't there, like, a silly vocal spot in this? I have a note that just goes, no!
Oh, when David does the Flair, like, I'm going up to the top rope, get thrown off, he goes to get grabbed and just goes, no!
Oh, okay. I just remember us both giggling at that. That was funny.
This is probably among the better David Flair matches we've seen.
Yeah, that is true. You said this might be match of the night, but is your bar just that low?
Tonight, yeah. We then see Ric Flair getting out of the car. So I'm like, okay, that's it. Nope. Okay,
yes,
here's
of course,
Rick.
He was in the Mercedes.
Post-match, David Flair, like, grabs the leg of Mike Awesome, like, stopping him from leaving. So Mike Awesome sets up a table at ringside and is going to powerbomb David from the ring over the top rope to the floor, yeah. Murdering him.
Sure.
And so Ric Flair comes out and is like, please don't kill my son.
He's very troubled. He's had a very hard time.
Mike, you have a kid, you know.
Does Mike Awesome have a child?
I don't know, yes. So Awesome's like, okay, yeah, fine, fair enough. David then refuses dad's help and they all go to the back.
Cool.
What a fucking waste of Ric Flair.
Right? It's the first time we've seen Ric Flair in the ring since Russo, right?
Yeah, since
the Russo cage match.
So it's been like 2 weeks.
Yeah. But that was like a big return for him.
Yeah, even though he says, I'm retired. Not doing anything.
Yeah. What year is it?
Backstage, Major Guns ask Kiwi for a new outfit. Landstorm comes in and is like, I have a match. Okay.
Cool. See, that's what I'm saying. You got to get all the guys on the show. Every person has to be involved.
We then get Lance Storm with Team Canada coming out to the ring, and I was very curious how they were going to deal with this, because they're not in America, but Lance Storm is like, just because you're not American doesn't mean I have any more tolerance for you people.
Commentary did have the good note, though, of like, wasn't Canada and Australia both British colonies at the same time? Like, they're both kind of under British rule in a sense. So they should be brothers, right?
There's also a very timely reference of Lance Storm is like, okay, I have Elix Skipper out here with measuring tape because I heard it was a local crew and I don't want another fiasco like the gymnastics equipment at the recent Olympics. And I'm like, you really had to be there, didn't you?
Yeah, I guess there was something up with the gymnastics equipment in Sydney. I don't know.
And apparently the ropes are wrong, according to Lance Storm, but he still wrestles, so.
Sure. Because what are they going to do? They're going to stop the whole show and rerun the ropes? Like, no.
Well, I figured he just wouldn't perform. He's like, nah, never mind. Lance Storm calls for the anthem. It plays for a bit before being interrupted by the Filthy Animals. And yeah, we just have a Canadian title match now. It's weird there was no counter promo, especially considering it's Conan.
Right.
But our match is Lance Storm versus Conan for the Canadian title.
So I really thought this was going to be Team Canada versus Filthy Animals, because they're all ringside, they're all like having their moment, but then Charles Robinson sends everybody to the back, and that's when you're like, oh, so it's just Lance and Conan.
Well, I figured it was them because Ray and Elix wrestled earlier, but the fact that they just like all disappear with little fanfare.
Yeah, they don't put up any kind of a fight, like nothing.
And Conan's wearing a USA basketball jersey. One, he's Cuban. Two, you're in Australia.
Yeah.
I don't know. It felt weird. The two chain wrestle to start. Storm throws Conan shoulder first into the ring post and hits a suplex. Storm toys with Conan for a bit, hits a backbreaker. Conan counters a suplex with an inside cradle, followed by a double clothesline from both men. Lance Storm hits a scoop slam and Conan dodges a diving headbutt, which I'm like, have we seen him do that before?
Probably.
Conan hits his rolling clothesline back kick and facebuster combo, which just makes me realize how little we've actually seen him wrestle in the last calendar year. Yeah.
Well, because he's been out with arm surgery.
And before that, he was out for suspension. Yeah. It's just wow. Seeing him hit his singles comebacks, I'm like, I think we haven't seen this consistently in so long.
No, it's been a minute.
We then get the whole crowd giving away something's going to happen because they're all looking up towards the ramp.
Yes.
And there's just some clunkiness because I guess Shane Douglas misses his cue. Because Shane Douglas kind of gets in the ring and they're trying to have Charles Robinson not see, but he makes full eye contact with him and then turns his head. Shane Douglas hits a punch or a forearm is all it looks like.
Yeah, I think it was a forearm.
And they're like, oh, he had something in his hands. It was a chain. Okay.
But he hit Conan and it had no effect.
Yeah, because...
if I knew Pokemon, I would make a Pokemon reference here.
Yeah, because Lance Storm hits a Northern Light Suplex. Oh, that's the finish. Oh, no, it's not. No. So then Lance Storm hits a Dragon Screw, locks in a Canadian Maple Leaf, and Conan taps out. Why? Why did you go another second?
Why wasn't the interference the finisher? What?
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't stress enough how little effect this had. He just bopped him on the back and Conan essentially just went, ow, stop that. Nothing.
It's like hitting scratch on a fortress.
There you go.
Where technically it did hit him, but come on. Yeah, the weird interference hurt the finish of this match and therefore the match a lot.
It was just weird.
Well, I guess even more than that, it wasn't the finish. It was what the fuck? The match itself, before that, was fine. It just not given a lot of time.
It did kind of get revealed that he had brass knuckles on. Something, a chain, maybe.
Yeah, they said a chain. Something. That's the problem with he has something in his hands. Jesus Christ, guys.
Give me a close-up.
Yeah. Well, let's head towards our main event of the night.
Crikey.
It's Sting and Scott Steiner.
Is it actual Sting or is it Jeff Jarrett Sting?
No, it's real Sting. And Steiner has Medeja out with him.
Classic.
And there's an added stipulation in this match because out third comes Jeff Jarrett wearing a referee shirt.
So this is essentially a handicap match.
Special guest referee match. Emily, please.
Okay.
Now, Sting sees right through this. Yeah. Immediately goes after Jarrett. Which I did appreciate. It's we've done this before.
Sting's
we know this is going to go.
Because
Sting goes after Jarrett. Steiner intervenes. Sting throws punches in the corner. Jarrett stops him, giving Steiner the advantage again. Sting just hip tosses Jarrett, clotheslines both men. Sting goes for a 10-punch spot, dives backwards onto Jarrett, but Jarrett whips Sting into Steiner, who immediately hits a spinning belly-to-belly, which, admittedly, when you say it like that, it may seem like, oh, he's going to go with the momentum. No, he throws him into him, they stop, and then they spin back the other way.
Yeah, no.
Steiner hits a backbreaker, but Sting kicks out of a fair count. Stevie's like, that's fast count. No. Because Steiner's also yelling at him for not doing a fast count.
Yeah, he should be doing fast counts. But Stevie, again, is just not watching. He is sitting ringside and he is not looking up and watching this match.
Because they are also constantly calling for a DQ in this match.
Yes. Do you see who the referee is? You're not going to get a fucking DQ.
Well, they're also saying that Steiner should win by DQ because Sting attacked Jarrett.
So, okay, that would, yes.
Yeah, it's stupid.
Yeah, fucking, I don't know, man.
Steiner hangs Sting upside down in the corner. Jarrett hits stomps. Then get referee Billy Silverman coming out to be like, this is shit, get out of here. Steiner just takes him out.
Yeah.
Steiner hits a T-bone suplex, does some push-ups. Sting smashes Steiner's face into the turnbuckle, but Steiner low blows him and hits some strikes in the corner, and then more push-ups. Sting gets a boot up on a charging Steiner, hits a stinger splash. Jarrett gets in the way of another, so Sting just kind of clocks him. Steiner hits Jarrett with a lead pipe on the outside. Oh, come on. That's a DQ. Tony Schiavone's like, he may have taken years off his career there.
What?
His career may be over.
What? No. Not in the slightest.
He
might have a bruise. I think that's it.
They then put the ring steps on their side and whip Sting into them. And they're like, oh, it's devastating. It's like,
you took
no.
all of the hard-hitting part out of it. Now it's just making a lot of noise.
Well, then after that, they're like, well, we got to get him in the ring. And Emily, how would you describe how Jeff Jarrett and Scott Steiner lift Sting to get him back in the ring?
Kind of like corpse-esque. Yeah. I don't know if you're moving
just
a dead body.
Scooping all the limbs.
Yeah.
Which is after the spot of his career's over.
Yeah.
So they throw him in the ring. Scott Steiner covers Sting. Jeff Jarrett is like half out of the ring. Like, all right, got to count to three. One, two. Cut to the cat sprinting down the aisle because he's too late for his spot.
So you got to do this really slow
Which
count.
We just fucking did this at ECW.
Yes, we did.
I was thinking about that because I'm like, oh, what happened there? Yeah, he pulls Jarrett out of the ring very late. Booker's kind of behind them wearing a referee shirt. Kat and Jarrett brawl to the back. Scott Steiner hits a suplex on Sting. He hasn't seen Booker yet. Booker goes to count, but stops at two and is like, nah.
Nah, fuck you.
So Booker kicks Steiner into a Scorpion Death Drop and counts the pin for Sting. Sting wins. At 8 seconds later, we go off the air.
Yep.
Yay! Thoughts on this match?
No.
No?
No.
I
Did you like this?
I don't know. The bullshit was so blatant, I almost turned around on it.
Yeah. It was very blatant. You're right. But I don't know. There's something about it that was just like, why the fuck are we watching this?
The problem was the bullshit was so blatant. Sting was like, all right, I'm going to try to fight him. And then they'd get to the middle of the match and he would just go back to not acknowledging Jeff Jarrett.
Yeah.
So I was like, that's the one negative point about it. If it was just the glorified handicap the whole time, I think I would have been better about it.
Yeah.
But the fact that it like dropped back into being a real match, like, eh.
Yeah, there was some element of this that I just did not jive with. I mean, that can be said for the entirety of the show. There was an element of the show that felt wrong, and I just did not click with it.
Yeah, I laugh. Everyone would be like, oh, the show gets so much better after Russo leaves. I'm like, wait, is it?
I'm waiting.
Yeah. Is the better in the room with us? Is the better even in the country with us?
I don't think so. We have one more week of this country, so we'll see. Maybe next week it all turns around.
I don't know. I've heard the opposite.
Yeah, I believe that.
Any other thoughts on this show as a whole? Because this show is all over the place, despite like seemingly only having 10 people on this show.
It's just so weird that at this point in my wrestling fandom that I can pinpoint that this felt like a house show. Because I've been to like a small handful of house shows at this point. But like the very beginning where it was just, everything felt a little weird. Even I was like, this feels like a house show. And I don't know why they chose to do it that way. Is it just because they don't come to Australia much? They just needed to like get all their shit in, brother? Like, I can see both sides of that. I can see it being like, well, we just lost Russo, so we don't know what's happening there. So we need to like do something that doesn't really move the needle too much. And we're in this place with a group of fans that are never probably going to see this product again, even if they don't go under.
I mean, like, they sold a crap ton of tickets.
Yeah, like, that place was full.
Yeah, I guess we didn't really know that. Yeah, this place, I mean, it was as full as it can be with the stage. Mm-hmm. That's the big problem.
Yeah. But Australia is not a hub for wrestling. Like, WWE doesn't go there very often.
Well, it's just that it's impractical. Like, when they go, they show up.
No, 100%. But it's just like, as a wrestling fan in Australia, you're not going to see another wrestling show for a very long time, if ever, if you can afford it. So in WCW mind, and maybe I'm giving them too much credit, were they thinking like, this is a group of people that are never going to see live wrestling again. Let's give them literally everything.
I mean,
people-wise.
I don't know about that. But it was, I mean, the reason for going was these people are starved for wrestling and, you know, we have what qualifies as wrestling, so.
No, I understand why they went. I'm just trying to figure out, like, why they put on the show that they put on there.
They don't know. You trying to qualify what type of show they put on is giving them way too much credit.
No, and I know, and I keep doing that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm trying to make sense of something that is nonsensical.
Well, let's try to parse this nonsense for a best bit, worst bit, and MVP.
I cannot think of a best bit.
Yeah, this is a tough one. You know what I did?
I feel like I know what yours is going to be.
Yeah, I did call it Match of the Night. It's going to be Mike Awesome and David Flair.
You sure did.
What else?
You're not going to like it.
Is it the fucking kangaroo segment
of
the
Metro Girls? No. Is that foot tag?
Okay.
It made me laugh. It was funny.
All right, Emily, what is your worst bit?
It's the Mark Madden bit. The blatant slut shaming of Stacey Keibler.
Now, are you continuing that through the massacre of your boy?
No, because that was not the worst bit. It was really just Mark Madden straight up talking to Stacey.
Yeah, I think I have to agree with you. Just like generally mean-spirited. Yeah. And like, again, I think because we know this isn't going anywhere, I'm just like, I don't care.
It's also just, even if it was going somewhere, that's just nasty.
Well, then Emily, who is your MVP?
You know who my MVP is. It might be the last time I'm able to give it to him.
Yeah.
I love Crowbar. He did so well. He's the only shining light in this show. He was just trying to make a bad situation better, and I love him for that.
You know what? I'm going to give it to a guy who got a decent match out of David Flair, and he saved your boy. He stuck up for his friend, and that's Mike Awesome.
You did give that match of the night, yeah. I guess.
I mean, it's...
Slim pickings. I don't know that Mike Awesome deserves it, but... Sure.
Honor mention for Sting. I did like his work during the main event, but...
Yeah, I'm really happy he brought back his surfer gimmick.
Fuck you. Oh, boy. Man, we really thought we were getting a rest when Russo left.
Nope.
Well, as you mentioned, it's been a while since pre-Russo Nitros, but if you want to listen to any of that, you can do so on our back catalog, everywhere podcasts are found, except for SoundCloud. Also, follow us on social media at Butts in the Pod or the Butts in Seats Podcast. And then we have our Patreon, little plugged in this one. $5 a month gets you over 30 bonus episodes. By this point, we will have finished TNA's new Monday Night Wars. And we're going to be doing All Aboard the Lex Express.
Woo-woo.
And then Vince Russo's Rope Opera. Our second book, because first we did Controversy Creates Cash.
We sure did.
New arc on Patreon to be announced at a later date.
We got to get on that Lex Express first, though. Choo-choo, motherfuckers.
Again, it's a bus.
Choo-choo. You can't go choo-choo on a bus.
Emily, any closing thoughts before? We're not even leaving Australia. We're just going across the continent.
We're just hopping. I was going to say across the pond, but that's not right. No.
Across the savannah.
Sure. Fucking whatever. We don't know geography of Australia. We'll see how next week goes. Maybe it'll be better.
But until then, I'm Nick.
I'm Emily.
And we'll see you again down under for the next episode of the Butts and Seats Podcast.
G'day, mates.